Good evening and welcome to Open Air, and good afternoon, Ashwini.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I have announcements here to start us off.
Okay, wonderful.
Sangha is once again invited to our spiritual home at 4 Acres Zen Center in gorgeous Squim, Washington. This year's Summer of Sangha includes week-long and weekend retreats from June to August. A full schedule of yoga, meditation, guidance, workshops, groups, and self-guided practice will be offered. And it will be possible to accept precepts with this practice during the Summer of Sangha. Registration is limited, so sign up soon.
Yeah, yes, Michael. I mean, we've I think closed 1 week, and we're pretty close to filling up the other week. So, if people are still wanting to come, to hop on it.
Wow. Okay. Great. Thanks for the additional information. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini, please press *6 and then 1 to make a show and get in the queue. And conversation on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great. All right, I think we're ready here, Ashwini.
Wonderful.
All right. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Emily.
Hey, Emily.
Hey, Emily.
Hi. I've been getting talked out of having a conversation about death, and I've felt like needing to get some clarity on, or I don't know, feel better about or something.
Mm-hmm.
Felt a little disappointed, and with the email class that we didn't talk more about death, or maybe I just didn't go deep enough with it, but I don't know. It was. I am.
What would you like to talk about?
Well, with my sisters, after my sister's death, since then, I feel like I'm able to process my grief, that I have tools to do that, and that feels good, I guess, feels right to be processing that. But I kind of feel disconnected with the actual death, and understanding what happened, and it's just I don't know how to integrate that or process that, or it doesn't have light shed on it. It kind of feels creepy when I think about it, and I don't have a context for it, or
So it seems like the actual death is something that you feel disconnected from, that you don't have a context for.
Yeah, yeah.
And it feels creepy when you think about it. So
yeah.
So say a little bit more about that, Emily.
It could be that I need to process more about it, but I can't relate to when I read, there was some reading sent out about somebody in the Sangha who died, and sometimes I read things about people who are like embracing death or going through and really going through it and processing it. And I can't relate to that because that wasn't my experience. That wasn't my sister's experience.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was just saying it. So it's just kind of sitting there. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and what I hear you saying, right, Emily, there is an attempt to try to relate to the experience by looking at what happened to other people, and all you're experiencing as a result of looking at other people's experiences that was not your experience. And so the intuition is to look at what happened to you during that time, right? I mean, that's an interesting process that we do, which is we're trying to make sense of it and
mm-hmm.
doing the things that we normally do to make sense of it, right, which is to ask other people, listen to other people's experience, read things, and see if somehow or the other that allows us to integrate the experience. But it sounds like for you, the intuition is, I just need to look at what happened to me, what went on for me in that experience, right? Not make sense of it, not step out of it and try to make sense of it, which is a feeling of being separate from it, right? Dissociated from it, rather than, okay, just talk about what happened.
Does that, when you hear that, what I say, does that sound like what needs to happen?
Well, it sounds like that's what you are saying, right? I'm not trying to make sense of it. I'm trying to process it. And so to talk about it, to talk about what went on and to talk about how you felt and what your sister felt and, not to try to relate to it in abstraction, right? But try to relate to your experience. So it's not thinking about it. It's literally processing it.
Well, I guess I wanted to look at it, or maybe, I don't know, I guess I wanted to feel better about it through a Buddhist perspective or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to see, right? That clearly there is some emotion there, and the emotion is an uncomfortable feeling. And so it is what we do, right? We want to reference something in order for us to feel okay. Mm. And that's not happening for you. So if I had a framework that says, if this happened, this is what it means, then there's an assumption that how I feel about it would be different because I got some explanation for it.
Well, I do feel like I want to know more about it. Like my instinct is, or whatever, my urge is to read. Like, I just ordered a bunch of books to see what we were saying before, what other experiences are like, and to know more about it. But you're saying it doesn't matter, not that it doesn't matter, but to look to my own experience.
Well, certainly as a part of it, right? I mean, have you sort of used your recorder to talk from the experience?
Yeah. I have.
Mm-hmm. And how has that been?
Well, It's a tool. We've been able to get to some deeper places, but maybe not so much about death, the actual death. Leading up to it.
Yeah, it's so, we'd like people to explain death to us, right? It's not an explainable thing. You just live through something.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. I want you to explain something about it to me. But
Well, and it's an interesting process, right? It isn't that we don't, there's something about processing grief that feels familiar, because it's not like we haven't experienced grief before. But clearly this experience you had around your sister dying, there is nowhere to hang it, right? There's no framework. And what we're desperate for is some framework so that we can contextualize it. We're comfortable with it. And your intuition is, the more you look externally for the framework, the less you're, it's not satisfying to you, right? Which is,
it's not what?
It's not satisfying.
Right.
Yeah, there's dissonance.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Something new and something scary. To me,
yeah,
not something a lot of people are talking about in the family.
It's new, it's scary, it's not being talked about. Other people are not attempting to relate to it, right? They're not trying to look at the experience and look at what happened and be with it or talk from it. At any rate. So, Emily, are you aware that there is some kind of conversation going on that says there's a way in which there's a way in which I need to feel about this, and I'm not there yet, and so I'm looking for a certain way to feel about it? Are you aware of a conversation that says there's something missing for you in this?
No, I'm not aware of much around that. But that could be going on.
Yeah, because I'm certainly hearing it in there's a seeking here, right? A seeking to understand. Which is very normal, right? When we have an experience that, within quotes, is not in our realm of experience, we do look for understanding, and as practitioners of awareness, we're aware that we're doing that, right?
Maybe I'm looking for an intellectual understanding.
And also looking to feel better, it sounds like. And so just that place of giving yourself the space to talk about it, to talk about what happened, to express what you're feeling about it. You mentioned scary and unsure and all of that, right? So that might be a portal to start exploring whatever it is that seems unexplored in this for you.
Explore what feels unexplored.
Yeah, you're sensing something, and it's always my experience that if it feels nebulous, it is. And so then what I want to do is to try to use all the tools I have to see what about to take it out of that nebulous place to really allow it to give me the information, to get some information, right? And I can't do that if I'm not looking at the experience and talking about it and looking at it more and looking at it more and talking to the recorder about it and just holding that space of what life, what now, right? What is this? What is this that I'm seeing or learning or looking at?
Okay. I suspected that's what needed to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially if there is a kind of resistance to engaging with it, right? Thinking about it is creepy. I'm looking somewhere else. And so perhaps your intuition that you really need to look at it directly and try to see it for what it is, that intuition is a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I'll work with that.
Well, keep us posted, Emily. Let us know.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Emily. And Ashwini, we're going to go to Good News Update, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. And Jen, hi, Paula. And Jen, I'm turning it over to you for Good News Update.
Oh, great. Thanks, Michael. And yes, welcome Paula, who is here to speak with us about her experience of practicing with accepting change. Welcome, Paula.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So I understand that you've had some challenging changes happen in your life and that you've seen a lot around practicing with that and guidance with that and working with that. And so that's what you're here to speak with us about today.
Yes. I'll just open by saying that last fall, I was experiencing some real health challenges, and I saw my physician, and she suggested that I get an MRI. She was concerned about some of my issues as well. And it showed that I had had a few strokes, which stunned both her and me, and set me on a path of, I've never quite been on anything like this before.
Hmm. And an excellent opportunity to practice with something that you've never encountered before, much like we were just talking about in that last conversation.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and there's always the pull towards something like that, when it's kind of shocking and it seems like it could potentially have a great impact on your life. It pulls a lot of attention. Yeah.
Yes, and I think one of the things you indicated is that's such a time when conditioned mind, you know, just rubs its little imaginary paws together. Oh, this is a perfect time to make meaning and, you know, scare stories and all those sorts of things. But it sounds like you really leaned into practicing with it.
Oh, definitely, because it was, you know, there was such a pull towards trying to figure things out, do the right thing, make the right choices, get all the information, and that was incredibly stressful.
Mm-hmm. And what were the ways that you were able to practice with it?
Well, I would say the very first thing I did was to, you know, reach out for guidance. That was just invaluable. I just felt like, you know, I really need help. I need I need guidance. And I think that's, you know, the beauty of this practice is that there's multiple ways you can get guidance. And
yes.
I was trying to take advantage of as many of them as I could.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, that's it right there. I mean, again, very much like that last conversation, there's the realization that we're in a situation in our lives that is something we've never encountered before. It feels bigger than me. As you say, you realize you need assistance with that. And there are so many avenues for guidance. And so you set on a path to avail yourself of as many of those as possible.
Exactly. And one of the paths is, and this has been going on for a while, but it's also the reason that I chose this topic is that of change is once a week on Tuesdays, my husband and I sit together and meditate together, and we also read a word from what university you're creating and share our you know, experience with that. And this week, it's I think the 14th week of the year, and the word is change.
Mm.
Perfect. Yeah. So it felt, you know, I'm paying attention whenever something just drops in that, you know, seemingly out of the blue. You know, it's life. I always want to turn my attention to what is life wanting me to see, because I think life always is on our side.
Yeah. And I don't know if the two of you do this with the What Universe You're Creating card, but the beautiful book that goes with that. So you pull the word change, and if you choose to, you can turn to that page in the book, and there's all these ways to practice with that.
Absolutely, and that's what we do. I have the book. Uh-huh. I have a little place that I set the card up on, at the beginning of the week. Yeah, and go through the whole, by the end of the year, you've gone through the whole book at 52 weeks. So that's a powerful tool. And about, I mean, just to go and read that excerpt on change, I believe, and it's my experience that we are incredibly lucky beings to have, I don't know how everyone else came upon this particular practice, but it's the most beautiful path I have ever come across.
Mm. Well, and you know, it's fun, Paula, about that particular example of where you said, you know, one of the avenues of guidance is this practice that you do once a week of picking a card. And what's so fun about that is it pairs the particular guidance of this practice, right? Because you get to read what Sherry and Ashwini wrote about change in the What Universe Are You Creating book. And there's a way in which, and I feel like you're sort of implying this if I'm tracking what you're saying, that life is leading, right? Because it's, I mean, maybe not literally, but it's easy to feel this way. Like life is back there going, okay, let's see, which card does Paula need right now, right? Let's give her that card. And that's the card that comes up. And it's just so fun. It's that place of feeling so cared for, so led.
Yes, yeah. So and there's so many. I mean, the longer I've been in this practice, I also was aware of how much change I've seen. Of course, I see it in myself, but I also recognize it in other people who call in. It's people that have been with the practice a very long time as well, and that, you know, the breakthroughs, the insights have just expanded, you know, immensely.
Yeah, and hearing people go through things, right? As you say, people that we've now known through Sangha, fellow Sangha together for decades, years and years, and to hear people go through changes in their lives and to hear them practice through those changes, it's really, it's so helpful to get to share those experiences.
Oh, it is. It's so, so helpful. And the other thing that dropped in as I was listening to you was that the other practice that's available is reflective listening buddies. And I have had, since all this happened to me, I've had, I'm on my third reflective listening buddy. And that has been such a connection with with Sangha that I have just been deeply, deeply grateful for.
Yeah. To have that support, that weekly support of getting to be with Sangha in that way where you have time to just talk about whatever you're seeing in your practice, and that person is just simply there to listen and to reflect back for you.
Yeah. I just, it's so, you know, to be reminded with all the ways in which practice offers to us every day to begin to actually do the practices. I have a recording and listening practice that I record every morning, and then a love letter, and I record and I listen to it in the afternoon, and then I record an evening support love letter, just some, you know, like talking to, I was out for a walk, I'll be brief with this, but I went out for a walk late this afternoon, and I was walking a bit in the woods, and I noticed a monarch butterfly, and I got so excited, and then I thought, that's change. That is a literal perfect example of change.
Yes. Well, and I love your description of how guidance is truly all around us. So we talk about it, right? We say it in the recitation every single day that we'll use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer so we can drop that and end suffering. And when we approach our lives the way you're describing, Paula, that truly is what happens for us, right? So something very challenging, there's a big change in our lives that's quite challenging. You know, instead of going with the voices and going down what would be a very, very suffering road, to use all of it as an opportunity to turn to the guidance and all the number of ways that are available and around us is a really, what a beautiful practice. What an amazing way to approach life.
Yeah, and the final thing on that was that, you know, I began to record a little bit about what was happening in that moment. And I got this conditioning dropped and said, oh, you're just talking to yourself. And I said, well, is there something wrong with that? And what I got back, I got back, you know, I'm really, we are our own best friend. You know, somebody that's always there for us to listen.
Yeah.
And when I started just, you know, talking with myself, recording it, it was like, is there anything wrong with this? I'm like, absolutely not. Nothing's wrong with it. You know, if you can be your own best friend, and you there's such availability to get the guidance that you need. And, you know, nobody knows that better when you hear it and it feels good.
Well, because we get to hear ourselves, right? So we get to step into that mentoring place where we're witnessing a human life through the eyes of conscious, compassionate awareness. So it's an incredible
process.
Yeah, I
love the way you phrased that. It was wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. And I will say, Paula, anyone who wants to join in with your once-a-week practice on Tuesdays, it just so happens that what universe are you creating right now? Anyone who buys it, I think it's between now and the end of April, all the proceeds from that product go to support the folks in Gandalomba. So there we go. There's an extra win right in there.
That's right. And even if you have a copy, order another one. Mine just I ordered another one.
Oh, good for you.
Worn a little bit. And they just arrived today. So that's another
excellent
sign. It arrived today.
Yes, there you go. Perfect. I love it.
And they
yes.
make great gifts, too. Sometimes, you know, you might exactly. come across just the right person that it would be a great gift. I've given them away, and I have also, this one is, you know, I'm seeing the wear and tear on the one I have, and I want it a backup.
Yeah, perfect. All right, Paula, well, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for the opportunity to share. I appreciate it.
All right, go happy.
You too, go happy.
And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Paula. And welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
Great. Thank you, Michael.
Sure. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Is that me? Yes? No?
Hello? Who's
yes.
this?
Can you hear me? Yes. This is Sebastian. Yes. Sebastian from Ecuador, but right now living in New Orleans, actually.
Hey, Sebastian.
So, yes. So basically, first of all, I am really happy that I am able to talk with everyone here. So sending good vibes out for everyone. And then second thing is nothing. Like I just lately I've been struggling a bit because I have to make like these really hard decision, which is like, do I continue to like pursue my dreams or do I kind of like take a break and like rephrase? And there's like this fear that is stopping me. So like, I know that if I move forward, I can be successful with whatever I do. But like, I have been like, you know, asking family mostly, and my family is like from a, like, you know, from a small social background. So they are surrounded by a lot of fear. So they are like, sending a lot of fear. So I'm kind of like, I don't know how to continue with my life because like they are sending a lot of fear because of like the context that they grew up on. And this is like kind of like really shaking up my support system, put it that way. So I don't know. I wanted to connect and see if there is any tips you can give me. Of course, continuing to pursue my dreams means I am going to school for another year, and that would mean like a big financial burden for me that I would have to eventually, like, you know, cover after I finish it. So it's kind of like I have to take this big decision that's going to be me, the like impacted person at the end. But like I, at the same time, when I look back on my support system, they are like, don't do it because like being in debt is bad. So I don't know. A part of me is like, do it because, you know, it's like, this is going to be a benefit for you. So I'm kind of like in this kind of like gray area where I don't know what to do. So I would appreciate some intakes on it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sebastian, it's interesting, right? Because as practitioners of awareness, what we're looking at is that process that we're in, right? It's not like we come to a spiritual practice to get the right answer to something that we're doing. I mean, I hear that's what you're looking for, right? How do I get to clarity about a direction to take in my life?
Mm-hmm.
And as an awareness practitioner, I'm looking to see what's going on for me in order for me to realize my process around it. And it sounds like what you're seeing is what we call a duality, right? A conversation around this is one way to go and here are all the things that are pros and cons. Here's what you need to be afraid of. Here are the consequences in the future in this direction. And then on this side, there are all these reasons to do it because you have dreams and you want to follow your dream and all of that. And what we're caught in is the process, that process of struggling because we're believing that the choice that we're going to make is going to have some consequence and there's a right choice to make here. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because if you know, this is what Sherry would say if she was on the phone, I guess, when and you called in, right, that she's, we always look at, there isn't such a thing as a right choice. There are no mistakes. You do what you do, and then you get to practice with whatever happens.
Oh, yeah, that was on her book, and I forgot about it.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're conditioned to believe that somehow or the other, I am in charge of my life. I'm in charge of my life. I'm going to make decisions, and those decisions are going to lead in a particular direction, and that direction is going to be good, and that direction is going to lead me to what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the belief, but in reality, we are just constantly, by second, living our decisions and not...
Yeah, and it feels so, I mean, it feels like a big decision, right? There are financial consequences, there are consequences to what will happen. If you do or do not make that decision, there's a lot of fear around it. And so at some point, you know, it's not that we don't look at the information we have and let life and our deepest intuition in our hearts support, you know, life will tell us the decision we make. But the important point is to recognize the process that is interfering with that intuitive sensing and the ability to be open to know from life what that unfolding might be. And just because I have a strong intuition to go one way or the other doesn't mean that it's going to be good for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's also what we learn as we live. We have all of these beliefs and conditions about how life should work and who I am and how much control I have and what should happen and what should not happen and how I feel about it and all of that. But we're paying attention to everything that happens because, as Jen just said, I'm just watching to see my process. I'm watching to see how suffering is maintained. I'm watching to see what I learn about me, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. That's very helpful. It's just I've been like really like on and on about it, and like I do know that I want to do it, and I don't know, I feel like my body tells me do it, you know. And usually when I go about listening to my body, like I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I always end up like learning something really meaningful that really adds value to my life, you know? So
exactly.
It's just like the support system, it's like fear. So, yeah.
Well, we know that fear is ego, right? We say fear is ego in the sense of every time you're going to do something that goes up against our conditioning, right? This isn't something that you're saying that your support system is representative of a way to be in life, and that's something that you're encountering, and you're going beyond that, then there's discomfort, right? Because the going against conditioning is uncomfortable. It doesn't want you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you say, okay, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go with my intuition. And then the conversation comes around and says, well, there are these 15 reasons why you can't go with your gut, right?
Yes. So your intuition is wrong, yes.
Yes. But what we're watching is how the conversation just keeps the decision, the attention on this or that, this or that, this or that, this or that. It's not resolving anything, right? It just has your attention and your energy.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for that reminder. So can you repeat one more time what was the quote that you said at the beginning? Like, conditioning is taking it away. It's taking it away from me right now. So.
I'm not sure which quote you're referencing, but that place of the attention is on maintaining that conversation, your attention on that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's
no.
what I'm watching. That's what we're watching, right? I mean, and just because, let's just say, you go with that strong intuition in your body that from which you've always learned something meaningful, you'll learn something meaningful. You'll find out what happens. Mm-hmm. It may not be, you might learn that perhaps this time around the intuition in your body wasn't the thing to follow. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
But
of course.
What we're learning is to be with life, be with our experience, be with ourselves in this journey. Because it's not the decision that is upon which your well-being is dependent, right? Ultimately, that's what we're learning. I can be with anything because I'm here to be alive and to have all these experiences. The misunderstanding is perhaps that there is a specific experience that will deliver what I want.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate it. I was just, yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I just wanted to remember the first thing you said, that it's not about, like, there is not, like, a good or bad thing, but it's, like, we live our decisions, something like that you said at the beginning, and then, boom,
You know, Sebastian, I can't remember. I've probably...
it's gone.
said, but fortunately, this is recorded, and so you can go back and listen to it.
Okay,
and then
okay.
We'll find out.
It's all right. Website, right?
Yeah. Good luck. Well, good luck.
Thank
and
you.
Keep us posted now that you're in New Orleans.
I will
we
keep
talk
you posted.
To you on this,
and when I am a trillionaire environmentalist, I will support this cause even more so we get bigger.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks, Sebastian.
Okay.
You take
right.
care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sebastian. And Ashwini, it sounds like the bottom line is to stay out of the
Hey, Michael, I didn't hear the bottom line because you're cutting out for me. So I don't know if it's me or you.
Sounds like the bottom line, as we always talk about, is to stay out of the conversation in the mind.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Yes, fabulous. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Vanessa in North Carolina.
Hey, Vanessa.
Hi, Vanessa.
Hey. So this is a not really sure the best way to ask this question. I've seen a lot. Well, I'll just start. So one of the things, the question is about calling egocentric karmic conditioning evil. And a strong force of evil, and referencing it as creepy, and like that. And mm-hmm. I have what I've noticed is like this reaction to that makes me be like, no, that's not it. It can't be that, and I feel like. You know, lots of times I'm listening to the guide and you and Sangha members, and it's, you know, there's this feeling of uh-huh. And then this thing, at least lately, comes up and I'm just like, oh, no. And so I wanted to ask about that. Either, there's lots of ways to ask about it, I guess, but I'll just say that.
Mm-hmm. And so what you're experiencing is a strong no to the way in which the egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate is talked about.
Yes, because I guess the way that I hear it is it makes it sound like the devil to me. This outside force that's trying to get me.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's how it lands, yeah.
Yeah, and an outside force is out to get you. And so what is the reaction? It's no, but no, there can't be such an outside force. No, it needs to be something else. No, that's not my experience. Have you looked at what that
right. No, so is? Kind of all of the above, like No, there can't be an outside force. I can't remember what you just said, but no, that's not my experience. And just can sort of a, also like a confusion, like what, like I hear the guide say like, you know, that she, I guess I take it as wanting to really emphasize that this thing is, has nothing for it for you, this, whatever this process is, this like program that runs. But it just sounds like it's starting to have agency, and then it feels, I don't know.
So it feels like it's starting to have agency, and there's a reaction to something having agency. And Vanessa, let me ask you this: does it occur to you to sort of follow the projection back?
What do you mean? Like recognize, like, oh, this is how, like, I had like an experience when I was a little kid with the devil and thought it was all made up, and then realized the grown-ups were serious about it, or like, I don't know what you mean by that, I guess.
Well, that's interesting. Regardless, yeah, but
okay.
I mean, that's what occurred to you to say, right? So that's interesting to see. Because so two things drop in, right? One is, I mean, we're awareness practitioners. We're watching everything, right? It's not whether, I mean, what it's gunning for is it evil or is it not evil? Is there is it an external force or is it not an external force?
Right.
The focus becomes on clarifying the content that is being objected to, rather than just being interested in, oh, all right,
right.
It seems to have never surfaced in all of my years of practice.
Suddenly,
it's an increasing level of resistance to it. Going by last week's assignment, resistance is ego. Can I just watch that, right? So clearly the model or framework that there's no resistance to is suddenly an object of resistance. How interesting.
Yes. So yes, I did get there, actually, and it kind of like diffused the whole thing. Like, oh, I don't have to decide whether this is true or whatever. You know, I can just be like, huh, why is this showing up?
That's right.
But one of the things that it feels like it's showing up is because, it's sort of like, I feel like, I think there's a confusion, which is ego, but then I'm like, is that ego?
No. Yeah, that's why we talk, right? We are not trying to parse whether it's ego or not or whatever. We're just processing here, right? So you're talking from whatever language you want to use.
Okay,
go ahead. We're exploring this.
So I have a reaction, or there is, I can tell that I'm identified in a certain way, or... and I just want to accept it, you know, or have a relationship with it that is not, that's accepting or curious or...
So clarify this for me. To have a relationship with ego that's accepting or curious, or just a relationship
not
with
ego, but... Well, maybe this is where the confusion is coming in. Like, let's see. Let's say I have, nothing is coming to mind now, but let's just say I have a part or something that is, you know, likes to eat potato chips or something like that. You know, I know it's not good for me, and but somehow I want to be able to, like, accept that part. And then I guess what happens is I get caught up, like, well, is this some sort of evil thing? Because it can lead me down to the road to ending up feeling very self-hateful. You know, like, all of these things can lead to feeling really bad and self-hateful, and then you should just die or you're worthless, like, all of that stuff.
Okay, let me reflect this, right, Vanessa, because I want to eat potato chips. What you're told is, well, that's not really you, that's ego, and so don't eat potato chips. And so what I project, the reaction to this, it's interesting, right? Because I don't know if this is your experience, but it feels mm-hmm. like the same process, right? Hearing ego referred to in a certain way as having agency means that you're subject to that agency, and there's something that doesn't like that, right? That sense of being controlled by it. So,
mm-hmm.
so it's the same thing. I want to eat potato chips, but if I live in a conversation that says you have to be the perfect disidentified practitioner and therefore you don't get to explore anything, then everything is either ego and no ego. And you're not actually in an exploration. You're in a conversation.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've heard Sherry talk about chocolate cake. Eat as much chocolate cake that you want to eat until you decide you don't want to eat and do chocolate cake. Right?
Right. Right. But the thing about the eating of the chocolate cake is you can't. You just need to eat the chocolate cake and watch the whole thing. You can't be in a conversation of like, I shouldn't be eating this chocolate cake. Oh, but I want the chocolate cake. Ah,
yes.
I'm going to be eating the chocolate
yeah.
cake.
I see. And so uh-huh. the ego resistance becomes to practice itself in the true nature of an awareness practice, which is to be aware, not to be in a conversation about not being disidentified, which is an identification.
Can you say that again?
So it's like, well, I know that's bad, and so, or I know that's ego, and this is an evil thing, so I should not do it. I'm still in a conversation.
Yeah.
Right? And so I'm feeling trapped by the very conversation that's telling me not to do something. Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm resisting being a hostage to practice, but it's not happening anywhere other than the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you really look at it, right, Vanessa, I don't know if this is helpful, but to me, if the resistance always has a has information, right,
mm.
and it what the sort of the life force experiences a longing for expression, a longing to experience. And the conversation is stopping that, right? But it gets morphed into, because it's ego, I don't get to experience something, and that's the confusion. There's nothing in
mm-hmm.
practice that says you can't have every experience you have, because if you bring conscious awareness to it, you learn something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I guess the fear is, and maybe this is the thing, it's like, you know, when I hear, like, it's out to get you or whatever, it will kill you, I feel like, can I really explore this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and so, yes. And so we are aware of that. And you can work with that in so many ways. You could do a two-handed recording. You can work with the fear book like that. Okay, so there's a fear here. Let me walk you through one step in the exploration and I'll be with you all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, right, Vanessa, I mean, you'll find out. You'll always find out. You don't have to take, it's what this, what the Buddha taught and what this practice is all about. There isn't some authority that is stating something that you can't have an experience with. And yes, okay, well, it's going to kill you. Eat a bag of potato chips and find out what that means for yourselves.
Right.
Yeah. Which is also an interesting thing, right? The ego would rather you reject something wholesale than look at it with curiosity and then just wait for what drops in terms of how you want to practice with it. Because it would rather have you in an abstract conversation about the possibility that it's going to kill you, and all in a conversation about trying to figure that out.
Yeah, and I'm getting stuck, I guess, right now on it would rather. Like, doesn't it just seem like the separation, my delusion of being a separate thing? I guess, I don't know. Yeah, okay.
Well, and it's, yeah, well, that I think is a good place to accept. I don't know. I don't know. Right? I don't know. So I want to eat a bag of chips. Let me eat a bag of chips and see what happens.
Right.
On a principle level, in some place I can look at it and say, I've had this experience many, many times, right? I eat the bag of chips, I feel awful. How many times am I going to eat the bag of chips and feel awful for me to get to, well, maybe I don't eat it, all the entire bag of chips. It's the same thing with the suffering process, right? We have to suffer.
Yeah.
We have to make choices over and over again till we get to, you know what? I'm done. I'm not doing that anymore.
Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah, the unconsciousness, it wants to stay unconscious, or I don't even know, you can't even say it. It is that thing, so that's what it's doing. And so until I bring awareness to eating that bag of chips and wake up like maybe halfway through and be like, oh, I'll stop now, that's just how it's going to play out, because that's how it plays out.
Yes, and you can watch,
right?
Yeah, exactly. You can watch. The fear is always related to the dissolution of that force, right? That orientation or that identity or whatever you want to call it. If you're going to see through something and see through something really big, then there is going to be resistance, because there is a maintenance process. However it's trying to do that, there's a maintenance process in progress.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because that's the way it works.
Yeah, right. I see. Yeah. So just keep paying attention and watch it all. No need to decide anything. And no need to be afraid.
Just pay attention, right? Because then the attention is on awareness. It's not on the content of what one is aware of, which is sort of the direction of attention that's important, right? And what the condition process is always turning the attention to the content. Make the decision about whether ego is evil or not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's going to kill you, then you can't do this. Well, all of that is in the conversation. I'm aware of it.
it's not real, right? It's in the conversation. And so the attention is on the awareness. The attention is not on the object, where you're being told to look.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I yeah.
It's a very big, very big place, Vanessa.
Mhm.
Yeah.
Mhm. Yeah, I'll have to listen again, I think. Maybe many, many times.
And I think it's interesting how our good news update says the guidance will unfold. You're going to love the year-long assignment for next week.
Uh-huh.
All about good and evil.
Oh, perfect.
All right.
Yeah, great. Okay, gosho.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Vanessa. And that was a fascinating conversation, Ashwini. Really enjoyed the insights there. And we have reached the end of our time here.
Well, thank you, Michael, and thank you, everybody.
Yes, thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, everyone. Go happy.